From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, welcome to a special edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Isabel Braverman. Today, we're going to be talking about One Small Step. The initiative brings strangers with different political beliefs together for a conversation, not about politics, but to get to know each other as people. Radio Catskill was one of seven public radio stations selected nationally to host One Small Step in 2024. Together with StoryCorps, we worked to match participants and record conversations, beginning in June and going through the end of the year. To date, we have recorded 21 conversations, and all of them are available to listen to on the StoryCorps archive. These conversations are also archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. We'll hear from Judy Balaban and Ronald Kelson, who worked on the project at Radio Catskill, as well as some never-before-heard excerpts. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. President Trump today signs the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, his broad legislative agenda squeaking through Congress on largely partisan lines just under the president's July 4th deadline. Trump celebrated his victory during an event at Iowa State Fairgrounds yesterday and plans to sign the measure today. NPR's Tamara Keith reports a lot of work went into the passage and even more lies ahead.
This was a pivotal moment in Trump's presidency, and he and his party rose to it. It took all-night debates and arm-twisting and passed with incredibly narrow margins in both the House and the Senate. And the question now is whether it becomes a long-term political win or more of an albatross.
The package aims to sustain $4.5 trillion in tax breaks enacted in the first Trump presidency. The measure includes over $1 trillion in reductions to Medicaid, health care, and food stamps, with new work requirements attached, and a major retreat in green energy tax credits. The bill also includes significantly more spending in national defense and immigration enforcement. The Dutch government says it has proof that Russia is increasing its use of banned chemical weapons in its war against Ukraine. Terry Schultz has more.
Dutch and German intelligence authorities say they have evidence Russia is intensifying the use of banned chemical weapons against Ukraine, using not just tear gas, but the banned chemical agent chloropicrin. Use of chloropicrin is prohibited by the Chemical Weapons Convention. Dutch Defense Minister Ruben Brekelmann says Russia drops chloropicrin from drones to force Ukrainian soldiers out of trenches so they can be more easily killed. There have been such accusations before, including from the U.S., but Brekelmann says the Netherlands can now corroborate this based on its investigation conducted with Germany. Brekelmann says lowering the threshold for the use of this type of weapon poses a danger to the entire world, and he's calling for more sanctions on Russia and support for Ukraine. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Wildfires in Turkey have burned thousands of acres over the past week in multiple provinces. Officials say three major fires are burning out of control in the south. As Duri Bhaskaran reports, two people are dead, four remain missing.
The victims include an 81-year-old man who was bedridden and unable to evacuate, and a backhoe operator fighting the fires. Summer wildfires are common along Turkey's southern coast, where high temperatures, dry foliage, and high winds can quickly turn a forest into a tinderbox. But this week has been particularly dire, with communities fighting fires on their own before overstretched fire crews could arrive. In a press conference, Turkish Agriculture and Forestry Minister İbrahim Yumaklı said at least one fire was set off by sparks from a welding machine at a factory undergoing repair. For NPR News, I'm Duri Bhaskaran in Istanbul.
This is NPR News in Washington.
Radio Catskill isn't just your source of news and entertainment. It's a community hub.
You get to hear from people in the community through their own voices. Hearing it from the source is the best way to get the facts.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's an indispensable source of local news, local culture, local music. It's really a glimpse into everything you need to know about the Catskills and the local area.
We love Radio Catskill. It gives a lot of great programming.
It's a forum for diverse voices, and we need you to keep this mission of public service going strong.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's very informative, educational, and so many great people that are telling our stories locally.
I just think it's very fun and personable. I feel like Radio Catskill keeps all the tunes alive and
I love all the coverage that you guys do for the schools as well.
I listen to Radio Catskill for the variety. I love the news, and I love all the different music programs that you offer. I love it all.
Your support during our spring fund drive funds local news, strengthens local culture, and keeps neighbors connected and informed.
You get information for your actual area, which is sometimes very hard to find out about.
I know what my neighbors are thinking about, what they care about. It means that I'm not just a person living in an area. I'm actually part of a community.
The news is good because I like local. I like to hear what's going on in my area. You don't hear that a lot from anyone else.
Your donation is more important than ever. Give now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
Welcome back to this special One Small Step edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Isabel Braverman. I am joined by Judy Balaban, a facilitator on the project. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
And Ronald Kelson, a producer. Hi, Ronald.
Hello.
Welcome. Before we begin, let's all explain our roles and talk a little bit about what we did. Judy.
Okay. Well, I was, as a facilitator, I was able to go out to the community and try to recruit people to come into the studio and have a conversation. I also was involved with matching people up and contacting them. And once they came into the studio to have a conversation, I would at times keep notes for the archiving, and at other times I would facilitate the conversation and make sure that it, you know, kept going and kept on track, which was not very difficult because people really enjoyed speaking to each other and the conversations flowed pretty well.
Yeah. And Ronald, as a producer and also our archiving master, tell us a little bit about what you did.
I don't know if I'd say master, but as a producer, I edited a lot of the promos, those lovely 30-second things that you couldn't get out of your head on our airwaves. And I also sat in on those conversations and made sure the audio levels were okay. Everyone could be heard well, the quality of the recording, as well as with the archiving, making sure we have all the subject tags at the end and all the specific time codes in our conversation profiles, so to speak, for people to navigate through and find subjects that maybe they're interested in or mean more to them. So that was essentially my job.
Yeah. And again, all of the conversations are archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And you can also find them on the StoryCorps website. Judy, I want to ask you, what initially drew you to want to facilitate these conversations?
Well, I am a true believer in the fact that if we want to make our community and our world a better place, we need to speak to each other. And in 2016, as a member of the Human Rights Commission in Sullivan County, we put on a Dialogue to Change program where we brought together over 80 people in Sullivan County to talk about the issue of moving from poverty to prosperity and how we can address that. That was a wonderful conversation. Through the Committee for Equity and Justice, we have monthly conversations on topics to try to understand our own perspectives and from there to understand other people's perspectives. And I truly believe that in order to create the world that we want, we need to work together. And in order to work together, we have to have a better understanding that we share the same values, whether we're conservative or progressive or liberal. And once we start talking, we recognize that.
Let's talk about the process of One Small Step. So it begins with community outreach and trying to engage people to participate. Once they sign up, which all they have to do is fill out a questionnaire, we receive their applications in the Matchmatron, which is the name of the system that we use with StoryCorps. And from there, it's our job to make matches. I found this a little more difficult than I thought it would be because, you know, I was trying to make the perfect match between two people, finding some things that they had in common, but
making sure that they were different enough. And it was a little more difficult than I thought it would be at first. Judy, how did you find the matching process?
I also found it a little difficult. And I think that was because we did not have an even number of people who were on one side of the political spectrum and the other side of the political spectrum. And things are complicated. It's not like, you know, you're a Democrat, you believe one thing, you're a Republican, you believe the other thing. Things are more nuanced and complex.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And then once we made some matches, we scheduled their conversations and people came into the studios here at WJFF. Before we hit that record button, we prepped the participants and gave them a chance to ask any questions they had before going into this. I think it helped them, you know, calm their nerves a little bit and they felt prepared going into the conversation. Judy, can you talk about how the recordings actually go? What sorts of questions do we ask? What is our role as a facilitator? And how does the conversation flow?
Well, we have the two participants come in and sit down, and we go over some ground rules, basically making sure that they understand that it's not a debate. They're not here to convince each other of their political views, that each of them should have about the same amount of time to answer the questions. And then we start with beginning questions such as, what made you want to come in and do the conversation? The second question instructs people to read their partner's bio. Part of the process is to write a few lines about yourself, and your partner reads that, and then they ask questions that arise from that. And that's an interesting process for people to see where they might have things in common and not. And a lot of questions come out of that. Some of the other questions are, who influenced you the most as you were growing up? And to briefly describe your political views. So those are some of the beginning questions. And the role of the facilitator is really to make sure that that flows along. And if it doesn't, we have other questions that we can hand the participants so that they can ask each other. So we're kind of in the background, not to direct things, just to help things flow.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times those opening questions, people just kind of took it from there. And, you know, even just responding to one or two questions, they would talk about that for a while because they found things that really interested each other that would, you know, they'd have follow-up questions. And I think you said this earlier, you know, a lot of times we did just sit back and we didn't really have to do much because they found it so easy to have that conversation.
Yeah, it was very special to be able to sit and listen to people as they started to open up and realize that they had things in common, or that they, even if they didn't, that they were interested in learning about the other person. That was a really interesting and rewarding part of the program for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ronald, you were, of course, here for every conversation,
sure,
too, doing our sound check in the beginning. What struck you about listening in on these conversations?
It was very interesting to see a lot of the different people we dragged in, a lot of the people who came through our doors to have a conversation about whatever they came across. Yeah, it was just interesting to see the people, all different walks of life, all different views, all different anything. It was an interesting experience. And, you know, I definitely had my fair share of personal experiences in the what we so call the political divide of our nation, and, you know, being too far one side to be too far the other side, and, you know, trying to really strive not necessarily to be completely in the middle, because I think we all definitely have our own beliefs of what is right and what is wrong, but to really take a middle road in evaluating, not necessarily thinking from one point of view, but thinking down the middle and fairly judging one side on the merits of their arguments and that kind of thing. So long story short, trying not to be biased. And that I think that this is what's taught me a good and healthy way to not be biased.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, the conversations, are, as we said, are not debates. They're not there to try to change each other's minds. But politics definitely did come up in people's conversations, whether or not they were talking about their own views or certain topics or just asking each other questions about, you know, why they think one way or the other. And I think people really were open. I think we were surprised by people's openness. Would you agree, Judy?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it, even people that disagreed, there wasn't the anger that we hear exists. And it really pointed out how the anger serves someone's purpose. When you get underneath the divisiveness, it's really not based on much other than where you get your news, who you're talking to, and really there's a purpose in creating that divisiveness. And I think the purpose is not to help our communities and each other. The purpose is to maintain people who are in power and people who influence the people in power with their money. And I think as long as they have us divided, it's like that whole issue of divide and conquer. Then we cannot come together and accomplish what we should be accomplishing to help our community grow and help everyone in the community grow, instead of just supporting the people who are already in power and the corporations that are creating the narrative for us that does not serve our purpose. And it was very interesting because when people sat down together, that never came up, that I disagree with you and you disagree with me, but we are part of the same community. And if we don't sit down and we just listen to what's going on online and in certain media, then we think that we don't have anything in common and we can't work together. So that's something that was very important for me to have reinforced. No, our community can. We need to have more and more opportunities to sit down and talk together.
Yeah, I agree with you. There was no anger in any of the conversations that we recorded, you know, not even close to it. And, you know, we do come from our own echo chambers, and not just from the news we consume, but, you know, who our friends are, who our family are. And we actually had one person who said she wanted to do this, you know, sign up for One Small Step because she lives in a bubble and she wanted to hear from people who are different from her, who have different opinions. And I think a lot of people came in here with that thought. They, you know, they didn't come in wanting to fight, which of course is in the ground rules. I think that's pretty laid out. But they didn't want to fight. They genuinely wanted to hear from someone else and possibly make a connection. And I think many people did. You know, after we stopped recording, they continued talking to each other. They walked out of the studio into the parking lot, still talking, just standing around out there. So I think a lot of connections were made.
They were indeed. I mean, I think a lot of you listeners may have heard of Tim, our general manager, has said multiple times on multiple occasions that he finds it so striking that we had a conversation between two people and an hour and a half later, they were still in the parking lot talking. And then, I know for me personally, we heard from two people who, you know, were really, or one person who was really adamant about being nervous to do this. And he really, I think, warmed up. And so after the conversation was over, I left to go scan something in or do some other paperwork. And then I came back in the room 15 minutes later, and they were like talking about animals and evolution and like that kind of thing. And I was like, whoa, hold on. How did we get here? What did I miss? So it's just, again, like the tangents the people can go on once they have this conversation. I mean, when you start them, you can't stop them. Yeah. So it's really fun to see that sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, not to really hammer the point home, but I think people did find that they had much more in common. Two people were both from the same or neighboring towns in Wisconsin.
Right.
Like, you know, they just really found those commonalities and even agreeing about the importance of doing something like this, like sitting down and having a conversation in person.
Yeah, and we have an amazing community here in Sullivan County and Northeast Pennsylvania and Ulster County. People have, you know, come here from who have traveled all over the world and have variety of different jobs, and people who have lived here their whole lives and are, you know, providing us with food and energy. It's really a joy to see the diversity that we have here and to celebrate it.
Yeah, hearing people's life stories was so interesting. Like, there was not a single boring conversation. And, you know, we sat in on, 22 of these. And hearing, you know, younger people, older people, people from different backgrounds, different religions, just hearing their stories was so interesting. And, you know, I feel like I really got to know the people of our community.
And it was it really amazed me how people were so open and talked about things that were so personal. You know, one of the questions is who influenced the most in your life? And that brought up a lot of very interesting conversations about people who were influenced, who influenced them for good, and sometimes they influenced them for bad, and they, you know, and they opened up, and that was amazing to see that people who didn't know each other suddenly were sharing so much of their lives.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear more about One Small Step, and you'll hear some clips from some of the recordings. This is a special One Small Step edition of Radio Chatskill.
From everyone at Radio Catskill, we wish you a happy and safe Independence Day weekend.
When you can, take a moment to celebrate some of your core American freedoms, like free speech
and freedom of the press. Celebrate these freedoms and many more by donating to Radio Catskill during our summer fund drive.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to this special One Small Step edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Isabel Braverman. So part of the One Small Step process is there are some guided questions that we ask to the participants in the beginning of the conversations. And there are four kickoff questions that, you know, each person in the conversation answers. So they ask it to each other. And I think the opening question of what made you want to do this interview today prompted a lot of really great responses. People had many different answers. A lot of people had shared the same sentiments. So let's listen to Robert and Nate.
So this is me asking him, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what made you want to do this interview today?
I don't know that I ever wanted to do this interview today, Nate. it was something I read on a website. I signed up impulsively, I suppose. And then when I received the phone call from Isabel, I felt guilty and thought, well, I better go through with this now. I've been certainly having second thoughts about it, even so much as having cold feet this morning. But I'm pushing through, and here I am.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Me too. Bob, can you read the same question, number one, to Nate?
So, Nate, what made you want to do this interview today?
So I found out about this through a mutual friend who is a member of the Young Republicans with me. And she suggested, like, hey, you know, come out here and engage in those conversations and have talks with people that may not be within your same, you know, political or cultural persuasion and everything. I thought it was a great idea. And so she connected me with WJFF, and here I am.
And Willow, from a separate conversation, had a little different motivation. Let's listen to her.
Willow, what made you want to do this interview today?
I really enjoy awkward conversations, like no joke. And this is an important one. I mean, it's very, my background is communications for most of my life and in multiple forms. And I still find it challenging. I mean, what are we taught, right? Don't talk about religion and politics ever, right? At least that's how I was raised. I mean, not, they were a little looser about that, but, it's a, you know, it's a sensitive subject, but I think we need more conversations like this, to find our common ground, to actually be effective as a country.
And that first clip you hear, I love how Robert said he, you know, had cold feet. He almost didn't come to the studio that day. But then him and Nate really had a lot to talk about, and they ended it with saying, oh, you know, let's grab a beer sometime. Ronald, what was that like listening to them?
Yeah, no, it was, they were really great guys. That was one of our better conversations, I think we can all say. Not that there are any bad ones, but some of them just become a little extra special and profound. And this one was definitely one of them. It teaches a very important lesson. Keep your appointments and your promises. Don't say you're going to do it and then don't show up. That would not be good. Please, if you say you're going to do something, do it. And we're glad Bob did, because him and Nate had a lot of great chemistry. Yeah, they said they wanted to have a beer afterwards, talk military. There were two military men from two different eras. One from, I believe, the Vietnam era was Bob. And then Nate served in the War on Terror era of the of our military. And so it was very interesting hearing the interplay between those two. And yeah, it was one of our special interviews.
Yeah. And conversations. I joked that they were using so much military jargon that, you know, some of it, I wasn't even sure what it was.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to decipher. You can go to the archive, listen to their interview. It's really a great one.
Yeah. And Judy, you know, when we are matching people, we do look for some things that they have in common. So we did know going into this that both Robert and Nate had military backgrounds. Can you talk a little more about that? Just, you know, the matching process, what we were looking for?
Well, initially, we were really looking for individuals who were on different ends of the political spectrum. And what I find interesting about this is that stereotypically, many of us consider people in the military to be more conservative. And we need to get over some of our stereotypes, because we found that that was not the case. We all learn different things from our experiences, and they were on different political ends of the political spectrum, but they had so much in common, wanting to serve their country and loving their country. And, you know, doing that service is very important. I think for most of the people that came in and participated.
Yeah, and I love how Willow, in that second clip we heard, she said, you know, we're taught not to talk about politics or religion. And yet here we are pairing two people together, again, not to have a political debate, but of course, politics and their views do come up. And oftentimes, you know, some people went pretty deep. Ronald, did you feel that way?
Yeah, we definitely got into some really interesting ideological conversations. I know in a conversation there was a debate about almost libertarianism and that kind of thing. And, you know, that you never see a lot of those. You know, it's not one of the major parties in our country. and there was one about policing in America. That was a really deep conversation about the role of police and the role of racism in society and that kind of thing. That was really interesting. And, you know, for me, it in terms of talking about politics, not allowed to talk about politics, there's no way to avoid talking about politics. You know, it's everywhere. It's every place in our life, especially in our local community. It's not about not talking about politics. It's about healthily talking about politics. And I think this is one way, one small step is one healthy way to attack those conversations and, you know, not ruin relationships, not be angry and resentful of someone close or even a stranger. It's about, you know, finding what we do have in common, finding, you know, accepting each other for who we are. And it, again, having healthy debates that, you know, make our country a robust, you know, democratic republic that it is. Robust, yeah. Robust, kind of, sort of, at times.
Yeah, and it was very clear that many of us have neighbors who have totally different political viewpoints than us. But they are our neighbors, and we can count on them, and they can count on us at a time of need. And that came through frequently in our conversations.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. I think a lot of people out there may have, you know, strained relationships with their friends or their family because they are fighting over politics. And, you know, if you are one of those people, I think listening to these conversations or just, you know, learning more about One Small Step, going on their website could help you reach out and try to have those difficult conversations with people who you might have a bit of a strained relationship with.
Yeah, we were speaking with somebody at our listening event, and she was talking about how, okay, the conversation was really interesting and it was good. And now what? You know, so my response was, okay, well, this is one small step. We can, as a community, figure out what's our next step. I mean, it's possible to find something that we have in common, whether it's something with our children or something that we'd like the legislature to do. And maybe we can get together and do that across party lines. And so we can take the next step if that's the step that we decide we want to. But, you know, this is just the beginning. It's a wonderful beginning because it really has helped to bring people together and show them that we care about the same things generally. So, you know, in the future, we can talk about where to go from here.
Now, Isabel, I know we're painting a very nice, pretty picture, but it's not always a nice, pretty picture. And I don't mean to supersede you, Judy, but there was one not very pretty picture that happened in the interview between or the conversation between Robert and Nate, where things got a little tense, things got a little debate-ish, if you will. And again, that's not the purpose of One Small Step, is not to debate, but to just have a regular old conversation. So what did that entail?
Yeah, so they had a moment where you know, basically Trump got brought up and the big T word. And, you know, people have their different reactions and opinions of him. And, you know, Nate sort of made a comment about how politicians shouldn't be celebrities. And Robert sort of responded to that comment, asking him. And, you know, Nate kind of took a moment and looked at me and said, can we talk about that? And I responded, you know, you can talk about that, but just keep it to your own personal views, how you feel about that. And again, he took a little bit of a moment and he said, you know, let's talk about that later. Let's move on, which was completely fine. And Robert was also completely fine with that. And the conversation continued. So I think it really shows how this process can work because, you know, the facilitator is taking the back seat. We're not there to interview them, or we're not a participant in the conversation. But if there are some tricky moments, you can step in. And they just got right back on track. And, you know, there are those topics that can become heated. And but you can choose not to talk about it, and you can move on. And so I think that was one of those moments.
Yeah, no, it definitely showed me how great you guys, both of you, are at navigating the conversations and being experts in, you know, accepting that there are differences, accepting that there are butting heads at points, but, you know, keeping it respectful, making sure they accept each other for who they are, and moving on and keeping the conversation going. You know, what was it, less than a week of training you guys got for being facilitators?
Right, yeah.
And you guys know it to a T, so it's always impressive to see you guys do that stuff.
And thank you.
Yeah, and with all of the conversations, that was really the one time that that there was any kind of tension, I think, in all of those conversations. And then at the end of the conversations, they still talked about going out and having a beer. So it did not interrupt the connections that they were making.
Yeah, I think it really illustrates, you know, what you've been saying, Judy, is that everyone has come in with the best of intentions. Mm. And, you know, that's what makes this this program a little different, because, you know, it has to start from a place of good faith. And thankfully, every single one of our participants has come in with good faith, and that's what's led to good conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said earlier, we heard from a variety of people, people who are new to the area, people who were from here, you know, longtime locals, people of all different races, ages, religions. But they all talked about, you know, what it means to live here in this community, whether they're new or have been here for a long time. So let's listen to this clip from Zach talk about his ties to Sullivan County.
Call it fate or whatever, but whatever path I'm on, like, things were leading me back to Sullivan County. And I say back to because my dad was at Woodstock. My grandparents used to vacation at the Laurels in Monticello. Like, all of these things happened here in a life that I knew nothing about. And yet, here I am, back almost where I came from, or where, like, shared experiences were. And I have to believe that's more than coincidence, right? And it seems like a really great place to continue my life, you know, this kind of this midlife pivot. And there's a familiarity to it. The day that I came to look at my house that I sold earlier this year, it was a perfect day. And the drive across the state, like, everything just felt familiar. It felt right. It was September in the Catskills, and it was gorgeous. And having never been here before, it was just like, wow, this is where I'm supposed to be. And that was 10 years ago. And here I am.
Yeah, I know. I moved to Sullivan County in 1986. Quite a few years ago, and I grew up in Washington Heights, New York City. Now I live in the woods, and this is where I belong. I don't know how I ended up in Washington Heights, I guess because of my parents, but I don't even like going into the city anymore. I just love sitting in the woods and listening to the quiet, because the quiet has such wonderful sounds to it. So I definitely understand what Zach was saying.
86. Good year. Mets won the World Series. Anyways, as someone who's lived here my whole life, I mean, it's pretty much all I know. It's all I've ever kind of known. And I kind of definitely didn't used to notice it when I was a lot younger, and still I'm young. But nowadays I still kind of sit around and look outside. Not so much now, it's the winter, but in the summer and when it's nice and not snowing, I like to sit around and say, wow, this is a beautiful place we live in. I know a lot of city people, a lot of Long Island people that I know who are like, wow, you live in the most ruralest of rural areas. I don't even know what farmland is. I've never seen a deer before, that kind of thing. And now we run over them every day. No, but it really makes you think about, you know, where other people live and how lucky we are to live in such a beautiful area.
Yeah, and, you know, so many people from the city and other places are moving here. And I'm so happy that we got to hear from both, you know, both of these kinds of people, people who moved here from the city, people who are born here, born and raised here. I think it really shows what our community is like.
Yeah, and all that we have to offer.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll hear more from One Small Step. This is a special One Small Step edition of Radio Chatskill.
On this week's Wait, Wait, Roy Wood Jr. is not ashamed that his CNN comedy news quiz may not be entirely original.
I have another show that I'm getting ready to host called Fortune of the Wheel. That is...
Yeah, smart. Very smart.
I'm Peter Sagal, Roy Wood denying he copied us, Jim Gaffigan on losing weight, and Amanda Seyfried on how to dance badly on purpose. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to this special One Small Step edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Isabel Braverman. You've heard us, myself, Judy, and Ronald, talking about One Small Step, a little behind-the-scenes peek at the process and what we did working on this project. And you've also heard from some of the people who went through it. And, you know, the recordings that took place here at the studio at WJFF, we did a 50-minute-long conversation. As we explained earlier, there were some opening questions and people really took it from there, sometimes going deeper. And we ended with some closing questions. Judy, can you, you know, talk about some of the closing questions that we would ask people?
Well, one of them was to ask if they were surprised at something that they learned about the other person. And one of the questions was, what gives you hope in the future? And we had some interesting responses to that. One of our participants said, dinosaurs. And I kind of love that answer because it kind of takes the pressure off of us as human beings, because if we don't survive, the planet will survive. And it kind of gives us a really broad perspective. So that was a unique answer. Most people had some closer to home reasons that they felt hopeful.
Yeah. And I think the question of, you know, what, were you nervous about anything coming into this? People had different responses. I think one common thing is a lot of people said they were nervous about how they would react to something. You know, if someone said something that triggered them and they were nervous about how they would react in that moment. You know, would they get angry or would they not know how to respond to the other person? And then what surprised them is that they didn't find themselves in those situations.
I think people, and maybe this is a reflection on our jobs a little bit, how people really thought they were going to come in here and just have an all out, you know, fist fight about, you know, politics and all the most divisive issues in our country. And again, like, again, it's not a debate. We're just talking about stuff and talking about how we feel and talking about our lives. It's really, we're not having the Lincoln Douglas debates in here. So it was really fun to see like a lot of people just, you know, be worried, so worried about that. And then, for, you know, people being so surprised about what they learned about the opposite person, you know, everyone was the look in their eyes when, you know, they said that, where they really felt that they had a lot more in common than they had different. And, you know, we've belabored that point enough, but really being in here and looking at, you know, our participants and, you know, really seeing the shock on their face was like, wow, we really, really didn't disagree on any point at in some cases. And, you know, and they obviously knew that from the start they were talking to someone different than them. It was really funny to see because, you know, again, a lot of people, you know, thought they were going to disagree so much and so heavily. So,
right. And like you said, they learned something about the other person. Like we had Camille and Brett, and Camille talked about how she has worked in politics for, you know, a long time and has even run a political platform on the Republican line. And her partner, Brett, said, oh, you know, I was surprised just really hearing from you. You know, I have my view of who a Republican is and who a politician is, and just actually getting to hear from you and hear what you think about all of that really surprised me. And I think we had a lot of those moments. You know, we had someone ask, you know, oh, well, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, so I don't understand how you're a Republican and I'm a Democrat. We had some moments like that too.
Yeah, it was. And in terms of what, you know, what gives you hope, we had our listening event last Sunday, I believe.
Yep.
And we had a board where people could put down what gives you hope. And these conversations is what gives me hope, and I think is what gives a lot of people hope. And as people were leaving, many of the partners thanked their partner profusely and were so grateful to have the opportunity to talk to them. And it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, so let's listen to Marty and Thomas talk about what gives them hope for the future.
What gives you hope for the future?
What we're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it starts here, and that's always been my place of how I've run my life, both personally and in business, is with one-on-one with people. And again, I did this for my own reaffirmation too. It's you know, not just to come out and whatever, but I wanted to reaffirm in me that there is this goodness there. I'll throw the question back to you.
You know, waking up, you know, I mean, waking up, you know, playing, you know, just having the opportunity to serve is very hopeful in itself. And knowing that this, you know, this part of my life, you know, 67, that people still love me, you know, and I wonder why. Like I really do. Like, you know, why does Mass, why does Lynn, what, you know, what do they see in this, you know, this fool? I really do believe that, you know. And maybe I don't take it for, I do take it for granted, but maybe I really don't take it for granted because I'm always asking myself that, you know, like it goes back to the idiot in the room type of thing. But, you know, that it gives me hope that despite all of my stupidity and, you know, chasing windmills, that people are still there and love me, my daughters, my grandchildren, you know. You know, so that really does. Yeah.
No, I agree. And I think what you said earlier, too, just waking up every day, I think as you get older, I am very thankful every day to wake up every day. Yeah. And you knowing the people that we've lost, I'm sure the same for all of us here. We've all lost people along the way. The older you get, the more you think about that on a daily basis and are thankful for the fact that you're here and some power has given you the grace to be here and there's something more for you to do.
Yeah.
Something more we have to accomplish.
Yep.
So that was Marty and Thomas from their One Small Step conversation talking about what gives them hope for the future. And I love how Marty talked about love, you know, within his family and friends that have a love for them. And so that question of what gives you hope for the future can be very personal, you know, in your own life and can be very broad relating to our country or our world. And I think people had, you know, different answers to that.
people definitely had a lot of different answers to that. Again, yeah, it's a very broad question. How you can tell it's a tough question is, you know, there's a lot of sighing before they answer. So, you know, as someone who's listened to all the recordings and gone in and clipped things and never edited for content, but always listened, hearing all the sighs before that question and before, you know, asking what are your personal political values and that kind of thing. That's the sign of a tough question is the sighing and the before, like, that's how you know.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people shared one particular answer, and that is the youth and our children. And that's what gives a lot of people hope. And I agree.
Yeah, so many people talked about, young people, the next generation, and how they did have a positive view of them and where we're headed. But that it's really up to young people to sort of take charge and work on making the world a better place. And people also had their, you know, concerns about young people. I think a very common theme that we heard is people saying that they think there are issues with communication among people today, and especially young people, talking about social media and the internet and how that really affects our communication with each other. In a mostly negative way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we need to make sure that our children are learning critical thinking. I don't think that that's being stressed enough in schools and in homes to, you know, have an opinion about something and then examine it. And where does it come from? And let me look at the other side and see if that makes sense. So I think that that's a huge issue, is that we're not stressing the need for critical thinking. It's memorization or listening to this, you know, the algorithm is feeding us the same news that they think we want to hear, and it's not teaching us how to think out of the box.
As we end, I would love if we all could reflect on how this experience has changed your perspective. Do you see, you know, more of a possibility of having meaningful dialogue across political differences? Have you seen changes within yourself or how you view difficult conversations? Ronald?
Man, you asked me first. It definitely has changed my perspective on viewing, you know, how we interact with each other and on the political landscape. You know, someone who, as someone who doesn't like to fancy themselves on one side, it definitely, not necessarily reaffirmed, but it established a stronger need for myself to be nuanced and to listen to arguments on both sides and to not necessarily choose a side. It's okay to believe in, you know, one issue that the right is, that you think the right is correct on, and agree with an issue that you think the left is correct on, or disagree with them both. So it's definitely established a nuanced perspective for me. And, you know, in terms of a improved political dialogue, you know, it there's that sigh again. It's really tough right now to see if, you know, good faith arguments and productive good faith arguments that lead to change in our country. It's tough to see how that's possible, especially in our, you know, legislative bodies. But, you know, if it can't happen if you don't believe. So I guess I have to say, you know, I'm hopeful that our politicians, our leaders, the people in power, or, you know, we can elect people in power who want to have productive conversations and sure can remain principled and fight for what they believe in, but also compromise and also find ways to, you know, fight for people and fight for real causes and real change. One Small Step's definitely taught me a way to have a healthy political dialogue with family members, friends, whatever, and, you know, it's definitely shown me that politics ain't worth dropping a friend over or dropping anyone over for that matter, unless, you know, they're really bad. But generally they're not. So Yeah, I think that's all it's taught me.
I just want to jump back to what you said about, you know, the political spectrum is so nuanced. I think that was a very common thought among the people who did One Small Step. Mm-hmm. We heard from many people saying that they don't fit into one box. They don't see themselves as on the left or on the right. They fit into many different places. And from there, a lot of the conversations talked about how they really wish that we didn't have this two-party system in America, that they hope for a third-party system, or, you know, seeing multiple parties. So I just wanted to put that out there, that a lot of people shared that sentiment.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, if you were at our listening party and heard Camille and Brett talk about South Africa and the parliamentary system and having more than two political parties, it was an interesting conversation to have. And, you know, and it's also almost a referendum on, you know, the matchmatron and how it forces you to choose on a scale, a 1 to 10, about, you know, where you lean politically. And it's, you know, not always representative. And it's just something, you know, that's what it is right now. And we'll have to advance towards, hopefully, that we can have more diversity of political thought.
Right. Judy, what about you? How has this experience changed your perspective or how you view difficult conversations?
Well, I am the eternal optimist, and I believe that difficult conversations are very important, depending upon how they are presented. I had mentioned earlier that the Committee for Equity and Justice that I'm on, we have monthly conversations about difficult topics, but the way we examine it is we try to take a look at our own perspectives and where they come from. I'm the child of Holocaust survivors. Just about my perspective on everything stems from that. And then we, you know, and that's important to understand about yourself and to try to, you know, talk about critically thinking, to really think about yourself and where your ideas come from. And then it might help us understand why somebody else who's had totally different experiences have different ideas. Part of those conversations then entail talking about positive and negative things with about the topic. We had spoken about immigration, law enforcement issues, and from there we talk about the positive and negative, and then we ask people to go home and when they come back have researched what are the facts that might, and, you know, that might support their position or the other person's position. So I believe in having difficult conversations. I think that empowers us, and I think we don't recognize the power that we have. I also recognize that from the One Small Step, I learned that I still carry a lot of stereotypes, and it's important for me to not react and to pause when something comes to mind and I want to react and say, wait a minute, where is that coming from? Let me research that and think about that a little bit more. So the conversations have been a huge education for me, and I really appreciate having had the opportunity. And I've loved working with Isabel and Ronald. Thank you.
Yes, same here. It's been a great experience. I've loved working with both of you. Thank you for listening to this special episode about One Small Step. You can go to the StoryCorps archive to find out more about One Small Step and listen to all of our archived conversations. The Radio Hubs project was made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Isabel Braverman.
Judy Balaban.
I'm Ronald Kelson.
Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new releases, film festivals, nostalgic screenings, live music events, and more. Information and schedule at thecalicoontheater.com.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with Bono, for more than 40 years, the lead singer of U2.
When I sang in U2, something got a hold of me. and it made sense of me.
He's out with a new documentary called Stories of Surrender. Bono joins me next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.